This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 190, sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service, Netflix, and iFanboy members like you. Hello, welcome to that fanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 190. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hey there. I don't know why.
Hello?
I don't like that. Hello?
Are you wearing a kerchief?
I am. I'm wearing a kerchief, and I'm in the center square.
Awesome. Ron Richards the block, please. At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics. No one under the age of 25 will know what that means.
Dude,
we
read comics. You're generous with that age.
We read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best one. We're so old. Writes about it on the website, and we talk about it in this podcast, along with various other books of the week, other topics of interest, emails, voicemails, all that fun stuff.
All I got to say is that if my dad listened to this podcast, he would have laughed.
That's a terrible Paul Lynde.
Before we get to the show, a quick reminder and warning, this is a review show, so we'll be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back later. You'll be a much nicer and happier person. Less
just
anger
in general, right? Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't think so.
Push on. This week, Josh, you had the pick, and there was about a billion books to choose from.
I don't think that.
Damn,
I would...
this end of the quarter thing. My God.
The last month has been, it's all rain and 100 comic books a week.
Well, not even 100 comic books a week. This is the last Wednesday before the financial quarter ends. So apparently, Marvel and DC just had to throw up every book that they didn't get out this quarter today. This week.
I don't think it was DC so much as Marvel. I mean,
DC had a lot too, though.
I had 20 Marvel last really week. I had 20 this week. Who knows?
I had 26 books this week.
Jesus.
I spent $80 on issues alone. Like I didn't buy the new Rick Geary book. Because I spent so much on issues.
Who else is left? Who got killed? Rick Geary.
There's a lot. It looked good. I looked at it on the shelf.
It looked really good. Yeah, I'm gonna get it. Anyway.
No, just want to know what it is, and then I will move on.
Oh, I forget who it was.
We'll talk about it after the show.
I'm walking away from this show. Walking away. That's right. I had 20-ish books or so, and I read all of them, and that is not conducive to enjoying comics. That's what I can tell you. You know what is funny is that I had a pick, like as I was like halfway through, I was like, hey, that one was pretty good, but I wasn't really sold on anything, and I left Greg Rucka's Detective Comics starring Batwoman for the very last thing that I read.
It's not just Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams the third.
Well,
on art.
Here's the thing. This has something to do with it. Now, okay. A lot of people, almost more people than not, were in this because of J.H. Williams. He's a guy that people love to death. I've not historically been a really big fan. I never finished reading Promethea. That was his big thing, and I didn't you know, like, I can appreciate him or not and everything, but he's not my favorite. You know, like, he's not somebody that I get totally excited about seeing. But I was really looking forward to seeing Greg Rucka get back on this, and then sort of as I went through it, I was really happy about the Rucka stuff, but it, even to me, who's a giant fan of the guy, like it kind of took a backseat to the J.H. Williams art that I was seeing, because I think he was doing things that I didn't expect. Like, I know the main pages that everybody's used to, like the they were in the preview and there are those interesting page layouts and everything, but I think that I didn't expect to see the sort of style change completely as he got to the Kate Kane not in costume.
The day scenes versus the night scenes, yeah.
And then even in there were a couple of other kind of like almost David. I wrote this in my view, like there's like his day scenes look almost like Jamie McKelvey.
Yeah.
In parts. And then his other stuff, you know, is that sort of painted, you know, it could be almost Alex Ross. And then there's like a little David Mack in there too.
Yeah.
Like it was all these different things that actually worked together. I didn't find it jarring at all. And I was really impressed by that. And one of the things is you see those really nice page layouts that he does, but also he's got other pages where he just keeps it simple and effective, and I like that because he's not like trying to do it on every single page where it doesn't necessarily need to fit. And those are the things that really stood out to me. It came up on the site that in my review I didn't talk all that much about the plot. There's a reason for that, and it was that so far we don't really have much to go on yet. There's Kate Kane. We see that she is recovered from being stabbed in the heart. And she's running around, and she gets a visit from Batman. And really, this is a get-to-know-you kind of issue. Not a lot happens. A new villain shows up at the end. I'd be hard-pressed to tell you what her name is or what her deal is, but she has stockings.
She's the new head of the crime.
Oh, right, the crime Bible
religion.
People. Yeah.
Right. So they're the people that stabbed her in 52 in the first place. So
her name is Alice.
Like her arch enemy, but even though she's new, this is her arch enemy group. But I thought what was best about this issue was you didn't need to know anything about her. Really, she hasn't had much of a history anyway.
Well, maybe
appeared in 10 books.
Well, the whole thing being that, you know, she was announced, must be 3 or 4 years ago at this point. Probably 3. And, you know, everyone made a big stink about it, and then nothing came of it. Like, she never got a book. She would show up every once in a while, and only Greg Rucka would write her. So, and she was always kind of interesting, you know what I mean? Like, there was all the jokes about her being, like, a one-note gay character or whatever, but he never wrote her that way, and I always kind of, when she showed up, I was kind of interested, because it was new, I guess. And for me, this was, you know, the main part of this was getting to know this character and the things going on, because the overall plot, that story of hers fighting the crime Bible people, that's the same thing that's been going on with her. It went on all through the crime Bible Five Lessons of Blood miniseries. It's what was going on with her in 52. It's just the same story. And there wasn't like a huge plot twist or anything to that in this one, but it was a lot to like otherwise, I think.
The bigger question is that now I don't know for sure, and who knows behind, you know, in the offices or behind the scenes, but I've been aware of this Rucka J.H. Williams collaboration for what, 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And a large portion of that was sitting on it by DC, and as evidenced by like that Batman, that's Bruce, that's not Dick. I mean, they're going to probably – I don't know if they're going to change it, but that it looks like Bruce. I mean,
but doesn't matter.
It doesn't have to be, right, but I got the feeling that it was, and that could be tainted by the fact that I knew that they were sitting on this. But, oh my, could you imagine if they came out with this right after 52?
Yeah, it would have been huge. Yeah. Like because, well, it's huge now anyway. But.
Because here's the thing. I mean, Connor, you're the Batman guy. Josh, you picked this. This was my pick of the week as well.
Really?
Purely for the reason that – after I finished reading it, I felt as if I had never read comics before.
Yeah,
like that. That's what it felt that like that the art by and the story by Rucka is top notch, and he's amazing. And we know how great he is. That combined with this amazing art from J.H. Williams, I felt as if I'd never read comics before. Like my eyes were open. Like all of a sudden the lights were on. I'm like, that's how you make a comic book.
Yeah.
Like those two page spreads, the one towards the end when she's kicking.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's the one that always comes to mind.
Oh my God! It blew me away. Like I didn't know. I couldn't believe. I read it like 3 times in a row. I couldn't believe what I just read.
Well, you know, one of the things about the art that I highlighted in my review, which I thought was really important, was that Williams found this really interesting balance of sexiness and strongness that wasn't cheesecakey. Like it's a beautiful girl and whatever, but there was no butt shot. You know what I mean? Like you see in every other book, and even the crime Bible, like, you know, her and Renee were just done up as you know, they look like sex dolls, But in this one, like, it was, I don't know, they found that right balance of stuff, and I was really, really impressed by that. And I want to read more of this story. The other half of it is that there's a backup story about the question, also written by Rucka with art by Cully Hamner, who is no slouch. I don't see enough of his work. He just did the Black Lightning Year One, I think, was the last art he did. She's apparently answering questions off the internet. That's what she does now, and that's fine too. And that's like, a lot of times a backup story you can sort of take or leave, but that one I was like, ooh, I want more of that too. And so it was just a good comic book experience. Really enjoyed reading this one, and it was the same thing. I don't know if I felt like I'd never read comics before, but I was just like, that was good classic stuff. It's not often that you read it's when you get a Greg Rucka book that is a pick of the week kind of book. It's very often not – it doesn't smack you in the face like, oh, my God. It's just there as part of a whole that's got a lot of quality to it, if you know what I'm saying. And even like the Checkmate issues that have been pick of the week in the past, it wasn't that they had these amazing blow-you-away moments all over the place or like all the Gotham Central books. It's just that they were so solid and enjoyable and compelling.
I
would agree with that.
Yeah,
it's funny because I finished reading this, and similar to how Ron felt, I finished the main story, and I thought, "Damn, that's so good! I wonder how many we're gonna get. 4, 6, you know, before he just can't. I mean, there's no way he can keep this pace up monthly.
I believe it's done and in the can.
All of it?
I think so. That's what I heard. So
well, it's possible. Well, I think the unintentional brilliance of the delay is that, at least if Batman never shows up again, he can be either Batman in this beginning.
I like that. That's what I was going to say, is that, like, you know, I don't know enough about what Dick acts like in Batman. Is he trying – does he go out and try to act like Batman? Does he stand in the shadows and does he get all – I mean, I would imagine that he would play that role. So that's why I was like, that could totally be Dick. He's just
– Even the line about getting your hair pulled was kind of a little more whimsical than you'd expect recently from Bruce. So it could easily be – Dick, and even if it was drawn and written 2 years ago, you can still very much have this taking place now, so it works fine.
Yeah, it did.
But you know, the art he's so innovative in his layouts, and they're not even. I mean, there's a lot of talk on the internet this week about layouts and simple versus complex, and it's not overly showy. It's just that it's artistically brilliant, and it all works. The context of the scene, that all the layouts work.
And then the mixing of the styles. I mean, like, I'm looking at the double page spread where when Batman leaves her and she's in the bottom of the page is her on the motorcycle, and the little kind of lightning bolt panels are curving down to the daylight style, which is completely different than the nighttime style on the same page. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I mean, just the mixing of those kind of those looks, and then, like you said, there's the page with the you know, kind of watercolory David Mack-esque kind of like memory kind of thought, memory panel. It's just amazing to see it mixing in a way that they don't get in the way of each other, and they all work together nicely, and it's just elegant.
And like, and Dave Stewart also going on top of that with different coloring styles for the
oh yeah, totally.
Too.
It's all part of the whole big thing. Yeah. Oh man.
I mean, he's got, you know, Rucka's got a hell of a team going for this book right now, and it's good to have him back. You're really, like, focusing on a character who's interesting and you know, that fits in with the whole world, and it doesn't feel superfluous at all.
And you can totally read it without knowing anything about her. You get all the information you need on the character and her situation in this page of this book. You don't need to know anything else.
And you don't need to know anything about Damien or Red Robin or Cowles or anything like that. I mean, like, I'm coming at it completely blind. I'm not a Batman reader, and this was a fantastic issue.
Wow, yeah, that's cool. Great. Yeah. So there you have it. That's why. I mean, I couldn't point to any wonderful one thing that they did. It was just one big old great comic book.
I thought it was interesting that in a week where freaking 90 million books came out, that this one would sit on top. Like, I thought that was really, you know, like, of all the different Dark Reigns and events and all this kind of stuff that's happening, the one this seemed to me like the most unlikely list, even though when you think about it, it's very likely because of how talented they are. Mm-hmm. But it blew me away. Totally.
That was 854, by the way. We never number.
Yeah, Detective Comics 854. Yep.
The book that was almost pick of the week, although I wasn't quite sure about it, was Superman 689.
Very close. I was wavering when I went and had to go press that button.
Yeah. So
it
I see
says
that,
a lot about this book.
I see that you felt the same way too. This was one of those like explorations of hero kind of things, and it was like the day in the life of Mon-El. And this is just another example of another character who's basically new, or at least new to me, and they're building him up into something that that's interesting and cool and different, and just playing with. I mean, it seems like you've seen the stories about what makes a superhero a lot of times, but this was a really interesting take on it. And the other half of it being don't yell at me, Connor, but like people think a lot of times that the DC universe is corny. And James Robinson went and he found all of these little corners of the universe, and he didn't make it corny. He made it interesting and seem not corny, or at least to seem sort of mysterious and interesting. I really liked that. It was just, I don't know, it was such a nice issue. Like, it had such a neat tone, and you know, like, I'm really coming around to Renato Gatiss as well.
Well, the first thing is last month, Mon-El, the main character, found out that he's dying, and he's not got long to live. So in this issue, he's basically flying around the world, visiting things that he wants to see, like famous pieces of art or architecture or famous cities, and through these visits, he encounters heroes and villains that he needs to help or fight. And so it's a nice little travelogue that mixes superheroing with famous pieces of art or architecture. And maybe because I'm reading Starman right now, in the Omnibuy right currently, but this felt the most like Starman to me from what I've read from Robinson lately. This
very
really
much
felt like Starman. The mixing of the superhero stuff with the real world things, and it really felt, it had the same tone, the same vibe.
Yeah, definitely.
I really liked it a lot. It had a little bittersweetness to it because he is dying. And then at the very end, there's a cliffhanger that made me go, oh no!
Yeah.
Character definitely. I really like is now in big time jeopardy.
Well, they're also, he was also like in between those pages, he just sort of every once in a while was moving the plot along. Also, and it's funny because it's Atlas, I guess, you know, who was in the very first issue that he did a while ago now. And I remember thinking like last week, I was like, whatever happened to that story?
I remember you guys talking about that story.
And they never really concluded it because it's this big swirling thing that's been going on in these books the whole time that Robinson's been around on it. It's kind of surprising how fun these are. But yeah, this was almost pick of the week. It could have been on another week.
Yeah, very strong. So was Amazing Spider-Man 589 though. I mean, there was, I thought Joe Kelly is just great. He's perfect for Spider-Man.
This whole arc has been, I mean, it's been really kind of, it's funny how the pace on this arc has changed, where it feels as if the past previous arcs were really kind of long and drawn out because it was going over the whole Brand New Day year and everything. But this one is like really fast paced and really kind of like edge of your seat.
I'm on issue now, by the way.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I started, I don't know, I probably went 6 or 7 weeks back, and I got up to, what's this one? This one's 589. I got up to 588.
Yeah.
And I had read them all right in a row.
Yeah.
And I had to wait 2 weeks. I was like, oh!
How did that feel?
It was awful. It was very awful. I was shocked at how in the whole American Sun story, how involved it is with Dark Reign and the Marvel Universe proper. Because, you know, before that they had felt like they were existing and they were still in the same universe. But, you know, he's playing directly with the toys from, you know, like, you know, he... Well, not this issue, but like when he, you know, he has Spider-Man beat the shit out of Norman Osborn. I was like, that's
that's
cool choices.
That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing with the whole Norman Osborn elevation in the Marvel Universe. How can Spider-Man not be at the center of that?
Absolutely. It's not even fair to just make those interactions be the case in Dark Avengers or New Avengers, which is interesting because it's so much more personal in this book between Spider-Man and Norman Osborn. Whereas in the Bendis written books with Spider-Man, Spider-Man's kind of
like you're right. Yeah, there's a little bit of an. I mean, there was a little when it first started where he was like, "No, he was, you know, saying we can't trust him," and he was kind of right there with him. But you know, it's Hawkeye in New Avengers, like in this week, New Avengers came out, and we get another Hawkeye talking to the camera, kind of thing. You know, kind of Hawkeye moment, Ronan moment.
Ronan. Keep it straight.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. I don't know what I'm thinking. Ronan.
Keep his proper name, please.
You know, I really like Ronan. Ronan's really got. He's really becoming the heart of the New Avengers. And like when Ronan, like he should. If I mean, they made Ronan the leader, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when Ronan's the leader, like when Ronan talks, I'm like, okay, stop. Ronan's talking. I gotta listen because whatever Ronan's gonna say is gonna be worth listening to.
I like how you said it, like Ricky Anderson.
Exactly.
Whatever Ronan says. Ronan's the best.
But yeah, but I mean, it makes sense that it would be more personal in this book. And then the fact that, you know, that Kelly is reaching out and involving, you know, ancillarily the Fantastic Four and, and you know, like little things like that, it's neat. I mean, like, it's what I would expect from this, you know, Spider-Man's role in this whole greater big story.
You know, what's interesting, too, is I think there's been a different artist on each of these issues.
Yeah.
There has been.
Yeah. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really
matter. I liked them all. They were all good. They were all good artists.
Yeah, it all worked, and so that works out fine. If you got to switch around, fine, or whatever. But I really think that sort of the personal vengeance that Peter Parker's feeling towards Norman Osborn is much more authentic in here than in the other books, and I find that makes it really satisfying. It's shocking to me that Kelly hasn't written more Spider-Man, because it feels so right.
Just so right.
How could it be wrong?
Yeah.
Let me ask you that.
The only thing this book could use that would make it a little better would be a little more Ronan.
Well, if you want more Ronan, then I think Dark Avengers 6 is the place to go. I might be getting mixed up with New Avengers, though. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think you are. Yeah, I don't think Ronan is in Dark. Ronan's not in Dark Avengers at all.
You're right. You're right. Sorry. Yeah.
He should be though.
Yes, he should.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of this? Are you still down with this? Because this was pick of the week for a while, or the first one.
Dark Avengers number 6. Yeah. I loved when the Dark Illuminati get together, but the panel where Osborn yells because I told you to, I could have done without.
I mean he's mad.
That's, I got the moment, but Diodato's that angle and the I mean, he looks like Sloth from the Goonies.
Well, that's the thing you get with Diodato's art sometimes. Photo referencing.
I've officially decided that Diodato's not for me.
Yeah.
It's funny because he's, you know, he's one of the top Marvel guys now, but like, that style is just not something I'm digging. I gotta be honest, this book's boring me at this point. Like, I'm like, get on with it. I really like, I'm probably reading it for the show.
Yeah.
At this point, which is very painful to say because, you know, Bendis Avengers should be among my favorite things, but this one and all the other Dark Reign books that I read, I was just like, eh. I was so much.
I wonder.
More
I mean,
about my
I thought
DC
this
books.
Was one of the better ones since the first issue, but I wonder if the whole entire enveloping Dark Reign thing is adding to that feeling, because there was a billion of them this week, and
it might be.
And
I think, but
a
also,
lot of them cover the same ground. They overlap, and if you're reading a lot of them, then you might, you know, I even dropped a couple. I was reading The Hood, and this week I decided, you know what, forget it. Like, just too many of them, and it really adds a lot to the stress of it all.
Well, I think it's that I really enjoyed – I think that I had read Amazing Spider-Man before this, and I really liked the Dark Avengers in that book, and I didn't like them in this book. Not didn't like them, but wasn't interested. And really, I really don't like the Diodato art. It's just the whole – and I know this is so lame because it's called Dark Avengers, but the whole thing is kind of dark and sludgy, and I just –
That's the Marvel coloring, though.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
And the thing is that I'm reading it because, like, in concert with, like, New Avengers and the other things, for the greater, you know, because the stories are being tied into each other, you know, loosely or tightly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I kind of want to see what's going on either side, because I want to know what's going on in the greater universe. But this one was rough for me, at least. I mean, you know, mainly in the art department, also in the story department, where, I mean, it's nice to see. It's cool to see, you know, behind the scenes and Osborn, you know, barely able to keep everything together and dealing with all these crazies and stuff like that. But part of me finished reading it, like, it doesn't have to be this complicated. Like, it just seems so complicated.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that one of the more interesting things in this was the Sentry.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, to be completely fair, like, I'm like, well, look, they're finally doing something with him.
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting decision to have Bendis to have the Sentry go to was it Naboo or what planet is Jar Jar?
Naboo Sabonka.
Yeah, when he went to see Boss Nass. Yeah, that was. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting choice.
The planet core.
So what happens is that a rogue faction of Atlanteans attack L.A. And Osborn wants them vanquished, and he wants Namor to do it, but Namor rejects it. Which, by the way, the whole idea of villains teaming up together, you know they're going to fall apart. I didn't think it would fall apart this quickly, but that's one thing. So,
I thought it was funny that all those other people were sitting at the table and never said anything. Yeah. Yeah, by the end, Doom's like, so can I go?
Yeah.
Come on!
But so Namor won't play along, so he sends the Sentry, and he says, you know, to kill all the Atlanteans, but bring one back so they could drag him through the streets and all that kind of deal. And the Sentry does it, and they're in this underwater kind of city with the bubbles, and it looks like Star Wars Episode One.
Well, the thing about this is going to be, though, to me, I'm thinking that, like, Sentry can't come back from this.
Right. Yeah.
Like even if he's not doing, I mean, he's not under mind control necessarily. He's just doing whatever. And I think it's kind of, if you take him as, instead of trying to convince all of us that he is the Superman of the Marvel Universe, like he's this huge loose cannon, this loose dirty bomb, you know, that could go off and just wreck everything all the time. And I like that as an idea more than I have in the past. That's one thing that impressed me about this issue.
Yeah. But then over in Dark Avengers, there's barely any mention of what's going on with Osborn as they're doing the whole Doctor Strange thing and Dr. Voodoo.
I mean, New Avengers.
Yeah, New Avengers. I'm sorry, New Avengers. And then the only thing is at the end is that you see Ronan see Osborn's reaction that was in the last issue of Dark Avengers, the war through the press. So they're loosely tied together, but I feel like I need to read them. Like I feel like this undying – it was funny because I feel like this undying pressure to have to read them to know what's going on Dark Reign, yet I'm not reading Dark Reign the Hood. I'm not reading Zodiac. I'm not reading any of the ancillary books. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting experience.
Well, suppose that you wanted to subscribe to all those, but you didn't want to pay for all of them.
You have to pay.
Well, you wanted to pay less.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So
there you go.
In effect, you would be getting some of them for free if you'd ordered enough. See what I'm saying there? You could go to Discount Comic Book Service, which is dcbservice.com. They have monthly specials of up to 75% off, 40% off major publishers, and that's how you can get sort of your weekly books if you don't have a local comic shop or you're not happy with the one you have. There's a flat rate shipping of $5.95 for all U.S. orders. You can get anything that's in previews. There's over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and ready to be ordered. You can track all your stuff online. That is www.dcbservice.com.
All right.
Big discounts.
So the N League is coming to an end.
It is. I had a little trouble getting back up to speed with where we were.
It's been a while. There was a delay.
It certainly has. But I did remember that there's certain parts of this that I like so much that I don't remember from the first half. You know what I mean? Yep. Like the I don't know any of their names, but like the Red Skull character. When I was like, oh, right, that's who that is. Okay, that's interesting. And then, like, once it starts to fall back into place and you're like, oh, the Captain America figure in here, it used to be a Nazi youth member.
Right.
That's pretty interesting.
That was a good reveal. Yeah, that was – I mean, this was a – I mean, it's all kind of – I mean, we're coming – you know, I don't know. I think the next issue is the last issue,
yes.
Is it?
Or the double size ninth issue.
Yeah, so, you know, previously, earlier in the series, they were chasing after Thor's hammer. And admittedly, I don't remember a lot that's happened in the thing. I just remember Kennedy's great art. But this kind of was cool to see, you know, all the characters who I remembered all seemingly in the same room. I got an idea. Okay, Thor's hammer. Okay, you know, like it moved the story along to the point where I feel it getting ready to resolve. And it was actually I had fun reading it. I thought there was a good combination of action and story. So.
I think that this is going to be a neat trade when it's done. And from where it started, that's saying a lot because, you know, two issues in, I was like, okay.
The beginning was very rough. I have the first trade and
But after
the first issues, whatever I have, it's hard. The beginning's tough.
This is just a beautiful book, though. I mean, I'm like, geez, look at this stuff. And I know this is not sort of the biggest of mainstream types of art, but I love these pages with many bits of my heart.
Yeah, the art is so good. Yes, so good. Yeah.
Yes. Very good. Cool. Let's talk about a Top Cow book. It doesn't happen very often, does it? I don't know exactly how it works, but Milo Ventimiglia, or Peter Petrelli, is somehow involved with Berserker number one.
I believe the stories come out of his production studio, Divide Pictures, whatever it is. Yeah.
So they have to put his many, many letters of his name on the book to help.
But
sell
ignore them. That. Ignore
okay,
it. You
ignore
need to
that.
Ignore
that. Yeah. What we've got here is. It's not a horror story. It's like there's a little town where these two people are going into berserker rages, and when they do it, they rip people in half, and they have to figure out why. It's like one of those books where at first you don't really know what you're reading because they throw you right into it, and by the end you sort of get it figured out. It's really violent, really very like bones shards sticking out violent.
That's the one thing that towards the end of the book, the blood starts flying, and that's really what kind of struck me. It was like, whoa.
So if you're into a hyper-violent book, but you don't feel like, say, The Boys is the kind of tone you're looking for, this might be something you like.
Jeremy Hahn, I was going to say, Jeremy Hahn is just great.
Yes, he is. It's a pretty strong book. It might be worth something checking out. It's like two loners out in a little town nowhere, and some shit goes wrong. And apparently, they're Norse gods. something like that. I don't know. Check it out. It's worth taking a look at. So,
cool.
G.I. Joe number 6 was, I think, my favorite issue so far of this particular book, and maybe it's because I wrapped my brain around it finally and decided that there are just two different G.I. Joe universes happening right now, and one of them is this book, and the other one is the other two books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of enjoying it as a G.I. Joe multiverse because they don't really fit together.
Not yet.
Well, no, but I just like one feels more real. This one's all about the G.I. Joe tech and like the over-the-top, you know. Mm-hmm. In this issue, Destro transports his body. He develops a transporter.
There is a broadcast energy transmitter in this book. Is there?
There
not?
Was a broadcast energy transmitter. And I did it, and I when I read that, I go, broadcast energy transmitter. Like, so I can't not do that in my head. But
lies.
I just can't. You know, it doesn't. It, for me, it doesn't fit. So I just decided this is a different world, and it's fine, and it's enjoyable on its own. And I actually really enjoyed it more. And it's funny because both this book and G.I. Joe Origins kind of have the same story going on right now, where the G.I. Joes are in trouble, and Rogue Snake Eyes shows up to save the day. But
I like Rogue Snake Eyes in Origins better because he's in bandages. I think it's funny that Chuck Dixon is going through a lot of effort to make sure that his Destro doesn't in no way sounds like the Destro from the cartoon.
Like the overly phonetic Scottish.
Yeah, exactly. At no point is he going to go, Cobra Commander is a buffoon. I'm just not going to do it.
Well, he's always supposed to have been Scottish, and that was one thing that sort of went to the wayside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Chris Claremont writing in the late 80s where everybody's accents are phonetic.
It was a good issue, though. You're right.
It was fun. And it was like very classic Snake Eyes with the Uzi and the swords. And they found a way to make Destro into Dr. Doom, basically.
Yeah, I was waiting for that to happen, too, so I was glad to see it. I was like, well, if that hasn't happened in Origin, why hasn't it happened now? Did either of you guys check out Dark Reign Zodiac?
I missed it. Was it any good?
Yeah. It's like it was nothing like – we were talking about how all the Dark Reign books were kind of boring. This one was nothing like any of those. It's just there's this killer, and he's decided to name himself Zodiac, and he's a serial killer. And there's a ton of blood in this book.
Is he out of San Francisco?
No, I don't believe so. But like,
I'm not gonna be able to sleep tonight. Stop.
Basically, he's like a villain who gets some other villains who are like, "Screw this! We're supposed to be villains, not this. Not this. We all get behind Norman Osborn, and now we're the establishment."
Heroes.
Yeah, and so it's really violent, and it doesn't look like a Marvel book at all. Nathan Fox is the artist on it. He did a few issues of DMZ here and there. And
yeah,
he,
I remember his issues. Those were really good.
He did a book called Pigeons from Hell, which I think was from Dark Horse. I never read it. But it's like flip through the thing. It really like I'm shocked that it's a Dark Reign book because it doesn't seem like it should be in any way. I actually really enjoyed it. It was good.
It was a book I thought about picking up, but it got
a lot of books.
All the Dark Reign books that came out, I said screw it to all of them. So
this is Joe Casey. He calls me if I don't read his books.
I lose.
So on last week's episode, we had Josh's Vertigo Corner. and so this week I thought I'd represent, and now it's Ron's X Corner. Because apparently as part of the deluge of books that came out this week, every X-Men title came out.
Thank God I don't read them.
X-Men Forever.
Didn't X Forever just come out?
Yeah, they're it's biweekly, I think they're doing God knows why. So X-Men Forever came out, X-Factor came out, X-Force came out, Uncanny came out, the Dark Avengers X-Men Utopia book came out. Like, there were just so many X books. But the ones I want to talk about, I'm just going to talk about three quickly, and so you guys can tune out. I'm talking to you, the X-fan who's listening. Although check back in later, Josh and Connor, because I'm going to make you laugh.
Okay.
But so X-Force number 6, X-Force number 16. You done? X-Force number 16 is the last chapter, the finale of the Messiah War crossover, which has been excellent until this issue didn't deliver. Like, essentially what happened was that all the, you know, big fight strife, save the girl, we save the girl. We don't find out who she is. We don't find out what her importance is. She and Cable time jump into the future. Bishop gets his butt kicked. Apocalypse comes back. And all the X-Force members go back to the present. Like, it was totally non-finale. Like,
It didn't pay off.
That sounds like your description there sounded like every X-Men book I never wanted to read. Like,
but it's sad because in not paying off, it was good. I mean, like, it was well done. It was well written. It was the action was good. But like the payoff of the story of like, well, what are they fighting for? Never delivered. You know,
what was that one I read? What was it? Messiah Complex?
Might have been.
The big one that was long.
Side Complex, yeah.
Yeah, that one didn't pay off either when it ended.
Yeah.
I think it's the same story that just still hasn't paid off, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, which is just kind of disturbing. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is apparently what in the world is happening to Warren Worthington.
I don't know.
In this book, in X-Force, or when it first started, Wolfsbane attacked Warren Worthington and ripped his wings off, and then he kind of grunted and then stood up, and he was Archangel again, and his skin was blue, and he had metal wings again. It didn't make any sense. Wasn't happening at all in the other books, okay? So now in this book, he's in the future, and he actually saves Apocalypse's life, and for most of this issue, he is Archangel. He's got blue skin, he's got the metal wings, but seemingly, and they never show it, but seemingly he can just turn that off and the wings go back to being feathers and he goes back to being white skinned. Now,
weird.
So now we cross over. So that X-Force 16, we cross over to Uncanny X-Men 512, which actually was really good. Had a beautiful cover. I don't know if you got to see the cover.
I saw the cover.
The cover was really, really good. But a really neat story in Uncanny X-Men 512 where Beast and his science team, they're trying to solve the whole mutant problem. And so they go back in time to 1906 to when seemingly the first mutant was born in San Francisco, conveniently enough.
Wait a minute. The Wolverine was born way before that.
Don't ask questions.
So
when the issue starts, Warren Worthington is there in angel costume, feathery wings, white skin. He goes back in time with Beast to kind of help out. And at one point, that like literally goes from one panel to the next, he has blue skin and metal wings. Like they're not like it's just this bizarro continuity thing, which I know you guys will make fun of me for, but like
continuity needs to make sense.
You need to explain that to me because even within the issue, they don't show the change, they don't show how it happens. Like it's physically like impossible. Like
it's not like you didn't read a book where it's not like you missed an issue somewhere.
Right, yeah, I know. Exactly. And I might have. And I'm sure someone will point out to me what I missed or whatever. But I don't think I did. And the fact that I looked at all these issues, in one panel he's white skinned, feather wings, the next panel, blue skinned, metal wings.
And is David Lynch the group editor?
He might be. What I thought was interesting though was that it brought back, remember that Celestials, not what was it called? That Neil Gaiman book, then John Romita Jr.
Eternals.
Yeah. They revisited the fact that there's a huge gold Eternal standing in Golden Gate Park in this issue. I was like, oh, I forgot about that. So that's good. That's good.
It's kind of hard to miss.
Yeah, exactly. But this, other than the Angel Archangel thing, this is a great issue. But the piece de resistance of Ron's Uncanny X Corner.
Here we go.
Is the Dark Avengers Uncanny X Men Utopia. This is the big, you know, kind of X Men Dark Avengers crossover. Norman Osborn's had it with the mutants. I'm not going to talk about the story very much because it, you know, aside from it being contrived and just creating a conflict between the Avengers and the X-Men for no apparent reason, as far as I can tell, I want to focus in on the credits. So in this, Matt Fraction wrote it. All right, fine. That's great. Mark Silvestri, penciler. Okay.
Perfect.
Michael Broussard, Eric Balsuda, Tyler Kirkham, Sheldon Mitchell, pencil assists.
Those are all the guys from Top Cow.
Okay, so keep count. Somebody keep count. That's five, right? Ready for this? Joe Weems with Marco Galli, Eric Balsuda, Rick Balsuda, Jason Gorder, Jay Leestein, Sal Regala, John Sabal, and Ryan Wynn, inkers.
14.
14 artists before we get to the colorists. 14 artists.
That must have been amazing.
So what you get out of it is that pages look completely different. Like it's just like it's vaguely Silvestri.
Right.
But it's not. And like the thing is that like and by no means do I want to, because a couple of those names in the pencil assistant inkers are
good.
Yeah, good, you know, like Tyler Kirkham and Sal Regala and John Sabal, and you know, I mean, like these are names that are good names and Ryan Wynn, like these are names I recognize that do good. But you gotta have some consistency on it. And unfortunately it came across for me like really noticeably as I turned to a page with Angel with feather wings.
It sounds like to me they sold you the book as a Silvestri book.
Yeah,
he walked in, shook your hand, walked out, and you had to deal with somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Have been fine, but it wasn't what you were sold.
You mean like when we have a guest host?
Yeah, kind of. There's literally one page where all the X-Men are watching TV, and Colossus is like thin and like skinny, like his face is really thin and long, and you turn the page and he looks like normal Colossus. Like it just, there was just no consistency. Someone, whoever's in charge of dressing Scott Summers in this book needs to be fired because he has him in a white turtleneck and a black blazer and it just looks wrong.
Hey, mister, I look like an Oreo cookie.
but then my favorite thing, and Jimsky, one of our writers, mentioned this over Twitter, and I had already noticed it, so I didn't respond. I didn't want to give it away, but I'm glad he caught it too. There's one moment. So basically, the whole story is that, you know, humans and mutants protest the mutants being in San Francisco, and there are riots and that sort of thing. Again, seemingly out of nowhere, because in Uncanny everything's lovely, but. So there's this big kind of, you know, riot scene in the beginning, and then it becomes one of those like where the whole world is watching, and it kind of goes around the world to show, you know, it shows, you know, Aurora in Wakanda watching on TV, and it shows the new Avengers in New York City, and Ronin's there, and it shows the Fantastic Four. But then there's a panel from Laveria, and there's Doom with Loki, except Loki's a dude.
Oops.
How do you not catch that? So this is a bit of a train wreck.
Well, the thing is, to change that panel, they would have had to call in like 14 guys.
14 more guys. Yeah.
One guy doesn't arm. One guy just does. He just does.
Messes
wrists.
Up payroll. That's what it does. Yeah. How much did you get for working on that book? About $8.
I feel good because I almost bought that because it was the first Avengers X-Men crossover in 15 years or whatever the solicitation said. I used to like those when I was a kid, but I decided not to.
My big problem is less with the art. The art is just funny, and admittedly, I'm taking cheap shots, and it's just, I mean.
You're a Silvestri fan, though.
I am a Silvestri fan.
Him. Yes. Yeah. That's why he draws the heads. Like the old style 40s style where the guy would date where Bob Kane would draw Batman and some other poor schlub would come in and draw the backgrounds.
Yeah. But aside from the art, the story is really, really contrived and forced, and it's just getting us to whatever Dark X-Men. Like, it's like they got this great idea to do Dark X-Men and do Norman and stuff like that, so let's just do it.
Ron.
As opposed to naturally getting there.
You tell me one place where it says Dark X-Men. you show me one place. Hey, let's move on to the user reviews, shall we?
Word.
Let's do it.
Stuklach says of Literals number 3, which is the last part of the Great Fables crossover, part 9 of 9, giving the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5 and 0, which is not a good sign. Percentage of the user base, this is the pick of the week. He says, this issue and the crossover as a whole was good but not great. The quality of Fables, in my opinion, is almost exclusively dependent on the quality of the characterizations in the book. Therefore, the real weakness of this issue and the crossover is that Bigby, Snow, and most of the other standby characters are extremely one-dimensional. Bigby's the aggressive guy. Snow is the superfluous wife. Jack Frost is a naive young man who fits the heroic quest role. Think of a slightly more boring Luke Skywalker. It seems almost as if Willingham and Sturges are bored with these characters and only include them in the story because they feel they should, or perhaps for sales or out of a sense of loyalty. He makes some good points. I don't think it was as boring as a lot of people do, but he gave it a 3 out of 5. I would either give it like a 4 or maybe a 3.5. I think it was an interesting experiment. I don't know if it worked altogether, but it was something different, and I don't fault anybody for doing that. I liked the end of this. I enjoyed it. I don't think it was a waste of time. That's how I would say. It's not high praise, but I thought it was pretty good.
All right. So our next review comes from The Horseman, who reviewed Secret Warriors number 5 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And about 0.26% of the iFanbase made it their pick of the week this week. And The Horseman says, let's start with Caselli's art. The guy is a monster. What I love about his pencils is that every character has a very original look. It's not just the costumes or the hairstyles, but every face is unique and distinguishable. His Nick Fury is bang on. There's also a dynamic flow to his panels, and his use of perspective is fantastic. After picking up the first few issues, I bought the first 3 volumes of Avengers: The Initiative and Trade. Yes, I like his work that much. And I gotta admit, this is the first Secret Warriors issue that I really, really liked. I haven't been high on this series up to this point. Basically, Nick Fury leads the new Howling Commandos and Dum Dum into not the Secret Warriors team, but the kind of loyal Shield guys. They want to steal the helicarriers, which I thought was great. I can't disagree with The Horseman's comments about Caselli's art anymore. I hate Caselli's art. It's too muscly and bulbous, and like I just don't like it. If this book had more of a cleaner line, slimmer kind of artist, I think this would be amazing, like an Alex Maleev almost, you know. But Caselli's art just ruins it for me. So
I like the art, but that's not the point. The point is the last 2 issues have been great.
The last 2 issues have been good. Yep.
Because they've been mostly about Nick Fury.
Yep.
Whereas I still can't tell you the names of the characters, the superheroes, the other super characters in this book.
Yep.
His team, I don't know a thing about any of them, nor do I care about them. I'm buying this for Nick Fury. And the last issue was fantastic. It's almost all Nick Fury. And this was mostly Nick Fury. And this is, it should be a Nick Fury book. And that's what I that's what I want. When they showed up at the end, his team of heroes, I was like, I don't care.
That was the cliffhanger. And I was like, oh, well, yeah.
I couldn't just be Nick and his Howling Commandos shooting up Hydra agents, which is fine with me. Yeah.
So you can go to ifanboy.com/comics, and that's where you can do your pull list. And you can come back on Wednesday or after Wednesday and rate them and write reviews, and we might read your review on the show. And they're all up on the website. You can go comment on them, talk about them. Lots of discussion in the review section. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. And when you're done with your comics, head over to www.netflix.com/ifanboy and sign up for Netflix if you haven't yet. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's watching movies. It's fantastic. They've got over 100,000 titles. They ship the DVDs right to your house. No late fees. Free shipping both ways. They've got Blu-ray titles. If you got the Blu-ray player or PlayStation 3 or something like that, super fast delivery. I mail back a DVD within 2 days. I got my next one in the mail already. Majority of the shipments happen in 1 day. If you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you can sign up for plans starting from $4.99. You can get a free 2-week free trial. If you've got the Xbox 360 or a personal laptop, you can stream from there. It's
or a Roku box.
I love it. So it's fantastic. And that joke will never get old. I don't care.
And I don't know if anyone catches it, and it's fine. It's totally fine. Because we're friends with him.
Exactly. So on to the emails. Our first email comes from Jesse Owenton from Kentucky, who says, "Hey guys, I was just wondering how you feel about your favorite comics being delayed. Do you grin and bear it, curse the creative team or publisher, or wait for the trade and read it all together?"
That's Jesse from Owenton.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No problem. we have, you know, it's funny because we hadn't talked about this in a little while. I think we talked about it a lot a long time ago. You know, like, where are you feeling about the late books these? I feel like there's a lot of them.
I'm okay with late books now. I've come to an okay with it. In fact, the later the better.
Well, somebody had said, like, I like late books. I won't read a book that's on time.
Yeah, no, the scheduled books, whatever. Keep me guessing.
That's too easy.
I know, exactly.
You know what's funny, though?
You guys realized that Daredevil came out this week and hadn't been out since April?
Yeah.
It was that long. I was thinking, was really good. How come I haven't been thinking about it?
Yeah. Really, it was April.
Wow. Yep. That's really interesting. And it's never, I mean, far be it. I mean, who knows what happened, but Michael Lark is pretty bang on.
He's not a late guy.
No, he doesn't tend to be. It's funny because we did the show that was like the best of, you know, the year so far, the video show, and somebody brought up the fact, like, how come you didn't talk about Old Man Logan? And I was like, because I don't know when it's going to be over, and I don't know how it's going to end, and it's awesome, but like,
well, we could have talked about Old Man Logan.
I guess we could have.
You know why? Because we probably, I mean, because it wasn't coming out. It wasn't, I mean, because of the delay. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that you're not thinking about it. That's the only thing. So
it's gone from your mind. That's
From your mind.
It depends on the book. For me, if it's like a Marvel DC book that's later than a couple of months, because a couple of months, anything can happen. You know, artist gets sick or hurt or something. But if it's like a book that's tied in and tied into everything, and it's later than 3 months, then I've got a serious problem with that.
I have a lot.
Unless it's a guy like
George
Quietly
Perez.
Or George Perez or Steve McNiven. There's a handful of artists that I will give leeway to because the art is so good. But if it's a normal book, then I've got a problem.
I find that there are – everybody okay?
Yeah,
Somebody smashed something in anger.
I dropped something. I'm sorry.
I want to read The Legion of Three Worlds.
It just – late books get me so fucking mad.
But I don't think that either of you guys – like, Ron, you don't get as mad about it as you used to at all.
Well, I've got other things to be mad about, to be honest with you. I kind of – you know, I've got life in perspective now.
No, you look tired. Anyway, you know what's funny? you know what's funny is I forgot. I forgot what's funny. I was going to say, I am not. It's not. It's not at all. It doesn't bother me as much because I understand. Like, I don't get mad about it. There's people who get mad about it. Like, they're like, why can't they do these on time? And it's like, well, Jesus, all it takes is one slip up. All it takes is somebody to get the flu for a week to throw the whole schedule off. And then a book's three weeks late.
But at the same time, I mean, Lost comes out every Wednesday.
Right, but there's a whole bunch of people working on Lost.
Plus, they only do 20 of them.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. I know. The thing is that it's a harsh reality, and it's sad, and everybody has the best of intentions, and this book is going to be on time, and it's never going to be late, and yada, yada. And then, like you said, somebody gets sick, or somebody gets another project, or they go to a convention or whatever, and then next thing you know, it's late. And it's kind of like I feel like I've been beaten into submission.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But then the super late books, like your Ultimate Hulk Wolverine books, that's ridiculous.
Well, I feel like once Ultimate, because that's over now, it's done, right? They wrapped it up. Yeah, so once that wrapped it up, I feel like the cosmic late book reset button was pressed, and we didn't really have any more ammo, and now we need something to be like tragically late that we can hold up as the martyr for all comic books.
You know? Kevin Smith still put out three issues
Batman
in a row.
Robin.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
All-Star Batman and Robin
All-Star,
is the winner.
All-Star Wonder Woman.
Oh, right, yeah.
If it never came out, does that count as late?
Well, we interviewed the guy. He talked all about it.
Adam Hughes,
we got it on tape, yes. Yeah.
He was ahead on that one. Oh, no, I've worked ahead.
Well, technically ahead if it never comes out.
I hope Batwoman isn't late because the art is so good.
I don't think you have to worry about that one.
All right, on to the next email.
Robbie Dizwana from New Jersey says, you know how Detective Comics, Streets of Gotham, and Action have backup stories for an extra dollar now? Wouldn't it make more sense if they put those short stories in the front of the books and made them warm-up stories instead? When you go to a concert, one band does a short warm-up set, then the headliner comes out and kicks ass. Don't you think these short stories would fit better in the beginning, especially since the main story is usually better anyhow, right? I always thought you were supposed to save the best for last. Maybe it's just how we were raised in New Jersey. Maybe it's different in other places.
There's more.
Well, now that I think about it, I thought we were just going to skip this part, but now that I think about it, preview should be in the front, too. You always see previews first at the movie theater, don't you?
You know...
That's from Robbie Dwarzmar.
Yeah, I don't know if that's all one word or if it's an initial.
Yeah.
Is Robbie Dwarzmar? Robbie D. Zwonar or Robbie Dzwonar, which is difficult to say.
Let's answer his question.
Okay, that's fine. No, let's talk about his name for a while. No.
Next email. Yeah, I mean, I think that if they put him in the front, there'd be hell to pay. I think everyone would flip out. It would break.
But it's so arbitrary.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's so stupidly arbitrary for people to flip out about something like that. It really is.
Yeah.
I like these co-features that they're calling them. Mm-hmm. It's something that and people complain and bitch about them, but I find that people who have only been reading comics for recent times don't realize this used to always happen in comics.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I mean, all the Silver Age books, they used to have multiple stories, yeah.
60s, 70s, and 80s, you bought a Flash book, you'd also get Elongated Man. You bought a Batman book, you'd get a Hawkman story. Like, this is
not
something
so
that
much
always
the
80s. Happened.
Kind of went by the wayside in the
80s. In the early 80s. No, the first half of the 80s, you definitely had them in the Detective Comics and things like that.
On DC, and Marvel didn't as much.
Remember when Rucka was on Detective and the backup story was the Josie Mac stories by Judd Winnick?
Yeah.
Those were great.
Oh, those were great. Yep.
Good stuff.
But I think, sure, they could be in the front, they could be in the back, it doesn't really matter.
Or how about they don't have them at all and it's
$2.99? No.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
Why do you have to start trouble?
All right, Josh, last one, last email.
My local comic shop has all kinds of wonderful, bright, open, and welcoming, with a knowledgeable staff who love talking comics. Picking up my stack of issues is always a pleasant experience. Recently, however, I've been a little less flush as the global economy entered into its doom spiral. This has caused me to turn to large online general stores that offer discounts on books for my trades and graphic novels rather than my local comic shop, which has to charge RRP, which is retail price, on all books because they can't afford to do otherwise. I honestly feel quite guilty about sending my money to giant online stores that are doing just fine when my excellent small comic shop benefits from every sale. Do you guys ever feel this guilt, and should I support my local and pay the extra 25 to 50% and buy slightly fewer trades? Perhaps if you set up an affiliate link for amazon.co.uk, I'd feel less guilty. Okay, so he's from the UK. I haven't done that. And he says he likes Phonogram too. Anyway.
No, he says, thanks for the podcast and keep flying that flag for Phonogram. It's a wonderful book. Standard man. Oh, and I never really say chaps, but as an Englishman emailing an American show, I feel I should. Pressure too.
Do you think we have all the time in the world? We can't edit anything here? What are we, around comics? Oh.
Anyway. Ooh. So, yeah, you should feel awful. No, do whatever you want, dude. I mean, it's tough. It's a tough world.
I never understood the idea that you try to find your best deal in everything you buy, in a car or jeans or food, but why in comics are you not supposed to find the best deal you can?
Because we just keep hearing about how retailers have it so hard, how the industry's doing awful, and how you should support your local retailer. And I agree with that to a certain degree, but the thing is that it's every man for himself.
Well,
I spend $30 to $50 a week on issues.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm not spending a lot of money at the comic store every week. And if I want to buy an omnibus for $50 instead of $90 at Amazon, I'm going to do that because
at those price savings, it's hard for the local stores to compete. And I think they know that. I mean, that's why my store gets one omnibus when it comes out. You know what I mean? And more often than not, he sells it. And then, and it's not to me because I'm not buying an omnibus on Wednesday. You know, I'm gonna go to Amazon and buy it and get a discount.
It has to be about what's important to you. If you feel like the services and the way that your shop exists, if that's worth it to you, then and you want to pay that extra, then do that. But no, you shouldn't necessarily feel bad, I guess.
Whatever gets you through the day.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions about comic book guilt, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com and we'll help you through it. On to the voicemail. We got one voicemail this week, which is about a book that we can't stop talking about.
Hey, guys. This is Brett from New Hampshire again. I'll keep this brief. Here's my dilemma. I have issues 3 through 7 of I Kill Giants. I've been dying to read this series, but I cannot find 1 and 2 anywhere. Should I just give up? Honestly, should I just give up and buy the trade? Be honest with me. I've tried the 5 shops near me and have been completely unsuccessful. I don't know what to do. It hurts me to just buy the trade because I already have these other 5 issues. Help me, iFanboy.
Yeah, Brett.
Just buy the trade.
Buy the trade.
Or you can go to conventions this summer and try to track down the issues, but buy the trade.
Just buy the trade.
Buy the trade. Just buy the trade.
There's no... I mean, are you... Like... buy the trade. There's no point in keeping the. I mean,
no, don't even. Just buy the trade.
Okay. But what?
just buy the trade. If you need to be told what trade to buy, call us on voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOY. That's 1-888-326-2697.
I think we came off as unhelpful in this episode.
Probably buy the trade,
or we're the bearers of harsh truths.
Yeah.
Listen, when it gets to be hot,
buy the trade.
This is a heat wave. There's a heat wave going on. We just give you the facts, man.
Buy the trade.
We don't sugarcoat it.
No sugarcoating.
All right.
We don't gussy it up with niceties. We smack you in the face and tell you how it is.
A little bit. He did it a little bit. He did. Buy the trade. Why you mother? You buy the trade.
All right.
Sorry.
Josh.
Okay. You can check out ifanboy.com. It's hot. Pick of the week. You can check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review that I wrote and tell me what you think of it. And more in-depth comic book discussion on all sorts of things. There's new writings that go up every single day and all sorts of really good discussions. Everything it's worth talking about. The long box broke on ifanboy.com, and that was the place to talk about it. All sorts of neat people showed up to tell us about it. You can also go to ifanboy.com/about, and you can see the social networking links for all of us, and then things like the iFanboy group on Facebook and stuff like that, and Twitter, and all those really good things.
Indeed. And if you enjoy what we do at iFanboy, doing this podcast, doing our video show, doing all the writing on the website, it'd be great if you could sign up to become an iFanboy member, because what we do does cost money and there's some real costs involved, going to conventions and keeping the website up and all that kind of stuff. So if you head over to ifanboy.com/store, you can sign up for various different levels. You can sign up for monthly at $4 a month or $42 a year, and that gets you the iFanboy prize pack, which gets you some stickers and some buttons and a comic from our collection. So the cost of a comic gets you a comic. It all works out. If you got a little more money to spend, you can sign up for $10 a month or $100 a year, and you get all that stuff I talked about, plus an iFanboy members t-shirt. People are going to be wearing them at the cons this summer. You don't want to miss out. So we thank everybody who signed up, and we still need to add to that membership base. So head over to ifanboy.com/store, and that's how you can be eligible for giveaways. Like last week, we gave away the Walking Dead compendium and the signed Joe Casey and Chris Burnham sketch books with Nixon Pals and Godland and stuff like that. So we've got a ton of great giveaways planned for the summer, so you don't want to miss out on that. So go sign up.
And while you're at ifanboy.com/store, you can check out the Power Responsibility t-shirt, which is our limited edition shirt. It's $15. You can get that there, and it's in red, and it's in blue, and it's going fast. You don't want to miss out on that. And you can still get the original iFanboy intern t-shirt from revision3.com/store. And you can wear that, and then we can order you to do things.
Awesome.
Get me a coffee.
You don't drink coffee.
Just get me one, and then I'll pour it out in front of you.
And when, after that's been done,
I call you
can head over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you can buy movies and DVDs and video games and books and comic books and all that sort of stuff. Help us out in the process. Amazon's got great offers, great deals. If you need to get the I Kill Giants trade paperback, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and buy it there.
Right below this show on your podcast feed, you can find a Transformers special edition podcast. We talked about Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, just like we do with all the big releases we like to talk about. So you can check that out on your feed on iTunes below this show, or on ifanboy.com. You can just go there and listen to it through the player. And last week we had the big announcement, the Murmur podcast, which is our other website. We had our first podcast, so that was over there at murmur.com or on iTunes. You can search for Murmur find the podcast. We'd hope you subscribe to it if you like this show.
And we'll put we'll put a link to the show notes in this show if you
we will.
Yeah. So
we hope if you listen to this one that you also listen to that one. That was me and Josh and Paul Montgomery, you might know, talking summer movies. The ones that have come out so far are the ones we're looking forward to. So go check that out at murmur.com and subscribe. We'd love you to. Thank you.
I found the typo for the week, and it's my fault. Every Wednesday, there's a new video show. You can go to ifanboy.com or, of course, revision3.com/ifanboy. You can watch it on your TiVo. You can subscribe through iTunes, all sorts of different ways. This past week was the best books of 2009 so far. And this
You love the pregnant pause before the so far.
Well, yeah, because yes. And then next week, I have no idea. What is
barbecue?
Oh my
god! How did I forget?
Yeah,
it's the
July 4th barbecue show, the third annual one.
That's right, where we cook and eat and talk. That's what we do.
And if you want to email us and let us know what you think of what we eat and talk about, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
Boy, this one sort of fell apart at the end, didn't it? If you like the show, and just don't judge by this one, you can leave a review at iTunes. We'd appreciate it. That's how people find the show when they're searching for comic book podcasts. And you can do that for this show and for the video show. We really appreciate it. It takes you no time at all, and it's something you can really do to help out the show. Even better than that is to tell your comic book store buddies, your friends, all the people at your store that you talk to or secretly scorn because they like different comics than you like, and that makes them awful. Yep. You can tell those people too.
And don't forget that the podcast companion book from Tomorrow's Publishing came out
this
past Wednesday. And if you want to read a very lengthy interview that's about a year old with
us. I'm in that book. I'm in it.
As well as our friends over at Around Comics and Word Balloon and Pipeline Podcast and some other podcasts are also interviewed in there. It's a great read. Eric, the writer, did a great job on it. So you go to Amazon, you can buy it there. You can get it through your comic book store.
I just want to say I recommend you get it through Tomorrow's.
Yes.
Their website, because if you buy the book through them, you also get a free digital copy, which is in color. The book is in black and white.
Yeah.
And if you want there's a ton of pictures, and if you want the color pictures and the graphics and stuff, the full experience, go to it's linked through our website. It's tomorrows.com? It'll be in the show notes as well. Go to Tomorrow's, buy the book through them, and you get the free color edition, which is really nice. It's really much better than the book.
Google Tomorrow's Publishing. That's spelled
T-W.
All right, it's getting hot in here, and you know what time that is. It's time to take off.
Take my pants off.
Take our pants off. Oh yeah.
I'm doing it right now. Quickly, hurry. End the show. The belt's off.
Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. I've got no pants on.
I'm getting a little gamey. I'll be honest. Smell me. Maintain the rock and you don't stop the rock. You keep up the rock. Quiet dog, quiet heart, my call. Simmer down, simmer down, simmer down.
Stay cool.
Simmer down. Simmer down, quiet dog, by heart, my God.
Stay cool.
Simmer down, quiet dog, by heart, my God.
Stay cool.
Simmer down, quiet dog, by heart.